Back when I was in Houston, I was a youth pastor. I was at the same church for about 14 years, and it was a completely different kind of church. It was a pretty formal church. It was a three-piece suit kind of church. It still is, which I find interesting. And after I'd been there a number of years, like I said, I was there 14, and after I'd been there quite a while, they started asking me to fill in and preach a time or two, you know, a couple of times a year maybe. And so on one of those, it was a Sunday night, and because we still had a Sunday night service, and they had asked me to fill in because the pastor was out of town. And so I'd worked hard. I'd put together the message. I had it basically ready to go. I had gone to the church early to pray, to review, to kind of get ready, you know, to kind of deal with any nerves I might have and kind of deal with that. And somewhere, you know, a few minutes before the service, I decided it was time to kind of deal with any pre-sermon stomach jitters. So I stepped across the hall to the little pastor's room to kind of pause for a moment of reflection, shall we say, just to go to the bathroom. And so as I was gearing back up and putting myself back together and tucking in my shirt tail, I did something I'd never done before. I'm not sure or since. I don't know exactly what I did, but in the process, just blew my zipper to pieces. Pieces are flying everywhere. The zipper is dead to the world, and there's no coming back. And it's about 15 minutes before the service. I live 20 minutes away. There's no going home. And my wife is already driving. There's no bringing anything else. And so I am stuck, and there's no hope. There's no change. And you got to understand. You got to understand, in this particular church, we don't do it here, but in this particular church, that whoever was on the platform, whoever was speaking or whatever, there were chairs up on the platform for us to all sit on for the entire service. So that every time you stood up to sing, well, there you were. And I'm thinking, okay, here I am, barn door wide open, in front of the whole church, trying to sing, trying to figure out what in the world am I going to do. And like I said, it was relatively formal. We weren't usually that loose in the way we handle things. So, Herman, can I borrow your jacket, you know, just real quick? So, you know, I had my suit coat, so I decided what I would do is just sort of walk around like this all day, right? Which is, I'm carrying my books, trying to mingle with people. Hey, how you doing? You know, and I'm singing. And I'm standing on the platform singing this way, you know, and which is a little weird, right? A little weird. And so I do the whole service this way until finally it's time to preach. Now, you know, this is my kind of lectern podium thing, a little narrow thing. Thankfully, this church had one of those coffins on end, huge, massive, like a command center from NASA kind of podium. So once I'm behind here, as long as I remember not to go walking away, I was fine. And so we work our way all the way through this thing. Of course, in my mind, two things are happening. Thanks, Herman. You know, one thing is going on in my mind is I'm channeling my junior high self and remembering all the things you would say to your guy friends if their zipper was down. Right, you know, your barn door's open, or XYZ, or zippity-doo, you know, whatever it is you would say to try to communicate this to them, you know. And the other part of my brain is constantly going, why does this stuff always happen to me? Because if you've been around a long time, I've got a long list of these stories of things that go on in my life, because I feel like Murphy just follows me and lives in my backyard all of the times. And anyway, we worked our way through it. It was all fine. But out of that, I mean, two unshakable facts about your life and my life, right? First is this, is that your life never goes according to your plan. Nobody plans on having their zipper blow up in front of a big audience. Nobody. Nobody. None of us planned this stuff. You know, every one of us in this room, your life, in some piece, right now, is not going according to your plan. It didn't go according to your plan yesterday. It's not going to go according to your plan today. It's not going to go according to your plan tomorrow. Our days are made up of a life where things happen that are not on our radar that we're not planning for. And we have all these phrases to explain all that, right? We have random events, right? We say things like, I didn't see that coming. We have unexpected expenses. We have unforeseen problems. We have unplanned pregnancies. We have things that come to us from out of left field. we say this in all kinds of ways, but really all we're saying is that our life is just this bizarre journey that's even more bizarre than a soap opera. And so your life is just not going according to your plan, which leads to the second unshakable fact, is that you're always trying to figure out why your life is not going according to your plan. You're trying to constantly figure out, what did I do to cause it? What do I do to fix it? What should I do next? Why me? Why did this happen? You're always trying to figure out how to do your life better, how to understand your life, like why these weird things keep happening. And it's that kind of thinking is what keeps you from being able to fall asleep at night, from wakes you up in the middle of the night, and wakes you up early before the alarm goes off. These things keep happening that are out of your control, and you don't understand why, and you don't know quite what to do with it, right? And so we're always trying to fix this thing. And so we just keep asking, why is this happening? And how you answer that question is critical. Because how you answer that question is going to determine how you live this life that's out of your control. And one answer is going to lead you to hope, and another one is going to lead you to hopelessness. One is going to give you joy. One's going to give you joylessness. One is going to spiral your whole emotions down the drain, and one is going to make you strong. And so how do you answer this why question? If you've been reading with us through the New Testament for the last 5 days, you've read the book of James, this letter of James where he wrote to all of these Christians. And a theme that is woven all through James's letter is, what do we do with trials? What do we do with all this stuff that comes our way that's not on our radar that we didn't plan? And he starts off the letter by saying, hey, you're going to get all these trials, consider it all joy. And in the passage we're in today, James 5, he cycles back to this idea, and he says, okay, let's talk about trials one more time so that we can kind of drive home our attitudes towards this, and we can make it work according to what we need to. And that's why James says, okay, turn over there, James chapter 5. I'm about to read it. Get over to James chapter 5. We're going to read a section in the middle of that chapter. James chapter 5. We're going to start at verse 7. And in verse 7 of chapter 5, it's a summary statement. He says, be patient then. Be patient therefore. In summary of all that we've been saying about this stuff, be patient. He says, be patient with all the twists and the turns and everything that comes into your life. So he says, be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. You see how that farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains? Well, you too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing right at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, Take a look at the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. And as you know, we count as blessed those who persevered. And you've also heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. In this little section, what James is driving home is that one of the key survival tools for trials is patience. It's patience. And as he talks about patience, he actually ends up using two different words to talk about patience, because one word's not going to get it. And they're translated a little differently, because when he's talking about, and the two words are patience and perseverance. When you see the word patience in verse 7 and verse 8, verse 10, this word patience, it's the whole idea. And patience is what he refers to that deals with people. We need patience when it comes to our people trials. Because, men and women, half the trials in your world right now are coming from the people in your world. And so he uses this word patience, which literally means, it means long-tempered. It means kind of slow to anger. It means that you don't fly off the handle. You don't get spun up, that it sort of creates this self-restraint or self-control towards the people in our lives that are giving us issues, the people that are frustrating or irritating us. And he says, you need a certain brand of patience with people that allows you to not lose your mind real quickly in the midst of it. The second word he uses is perseverance, and that really deals with situations. It's a situational patience, if you will. And in verse 11, when he talks about it, he starts talking about Job, who had all these situations. We'll get back to him in a minute. But the idea of perseverance is your ability to stand up under pressure. It's endurance. It's the idea that you're getting squished down, and you're able to stand strong in the middle of this thing. And it means to endure when things are hard. Now, over the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years maybe, I have started going to see a chiropractor, which I'd never done. And so I've been seeing a guy named Jason Teal. He's here in the church. And so I go to see Jason, and I go every so often or when things are bugging me or whatever. And so I went a couple of weeks ago. And so when I went in, my right side of my neck and my shoulder right in here, I mean, it was just painful. Like trying to turn or whatever, it hurt. So I went in there and I said, this right side, this is a mess. Fix this. And then, of course, what you do, if you've ever been to the chiropractor, you lay down on your face. You can't see what they're doing. That's part of the idea. And that's good. And so what happens is I lay there and he kind of feels around in my back a minute. And the next thing I know, even though the pain is on my right side, he starts working in my left shoulder blade right here. And he says, that's where the issue is. Over here is the symptom. Over here is the problem. And which, by the way, this has nothing to do with today's message, but let me give you this little goodie, okay? And that is this. It's only the doctor that knows the difference between the problem and the symptom. The great physician is the only one who's wise enough to know exactly where to put his fingers in your life to deal with the symptoms that are driving you crazy. Now, that just write it down. It's worth it, all right? But anyway, Jason goes to work on this knot in my left shoulder blade that I didn't know was there. And everything inside of me, I said at one point, all I want to do is get in my car and drive away. It hurt. It hurt like crazy. And he's shoving thumbs and elbows and, just boring in on this thing, and it's in agony. And when he's doing that, and he says this all the time, when I start to kind of, you can feel it, the phrase he uses is, don't run away from me. Don't fight what I'm doing. Don't resist it. That's the perfect picture of perseverance. That's what Jesus is saying, is that perseverance is your ability to stay and endure the very thing you want to run away from that is good for you. And so he says, look, you've got to be patient, long-suffering, long-tempered with people. In perseverance, the ability to stay when you want to run away, to make the pain somehow go away, to endure until it does what it needs to do. And so James starts this thing off, and he says, be patient. But he doesn't just stop there. He doesn't just say, hey, everybody just go be patient. He tells us why. And here's the reason, is that I can be patient during trials when I remember that God is refining me. The trials have a purpose. If you look back at James 5, verse 7, what he says is, be patient, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming, which tells us they aren't going to last forever. And he says, see how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You see what he's saying? He says, be patient because God is growing a harvest in you. He's growing character in you. He's growing all kinds of character in you. He is growing you up. This is why at the beginning of the book, when James writes those famous verses, consider it all joy, my brothers, he tells us why. Because it leads to perseverance, it leads to character, it leads to maturity. All of these things that are going on, these trials, are all about growing us up. Now, those are relatively familiar passages. I'd like you to turn one page towards the back of the book in what we'll read tomorrow in 1 Peter chapter 1. So turn over just a page, 1 Peter chapter 1, And I want you to look, because Peter, James uses this images of growing us up. He uses this picture of a crop being formed. Peter uses a different image, and he talks about refining ore. Look at verse 6. He says, "In all of this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials." Notice what he's saying in that verse. He's saying, for a little while, what you're going through is not going to last forever. This trial you're in right now, it's not an eternal trial. It is a temporary situation. And he says, you may have had to, it might be absolutely necessary for you to go through this in order to become the person that you want to be. And he says, you may have to suffer grief, which tells us this, the trials are no fun. They are painful. They are agonized. There's a grieving we do going through it because it hurts so much. And it's all kinds of trials. There are a million varieties of trials. Anywhere from physical illness to blowing your zipper up to whatever it may be. And he says, and then he tells us why. Look at verse 7. He says, all these trials have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed in you and in person. You see what he's saying? All this stuff, we're trying to figure out why it's happening. He tells us why. You're being refined. Peter compares you to ore. And ore is filled with corruptions. It's filled with impurities. But woven into the ore is gold, which is valuable and beautiful. But the ore robs the gold of its strength and its beauty. Now, out of curiosity, show of hands, how many of you are wearing something made out of gold this morning? Show of hands, come on. All right, just pass that to the aisle. Pass it, we'll collect that. It'll be great. Right? How many of you are wearing ore? Ore is ugly. Ore is contaminated. The process of separating gold and ore is not complicated. It's incredibly simple. You simply expose it all to white hot heat until they separate naturally. And that's what God is doing. I mean, because here's the thing. You and I, we are orific. We are. Thank you. I worked hard on that. There is something wrong with every one of us. You are ore in your being. You are ore. It is ugly. It is contaminated. It is impure. And you are gold. You are beautiful. You are strong. You are an image bearer of God. You are a child of the King. And these two things are woven together. And what God does is bring trials into our lives to separate the gold from the ore, to the contamination, so that more and more gold shines out through you. You are now in the process of being refined. And that's what the trials are doing. He takes us where we do not want to go so that we become what we've always wanted to be. And there is no other option. There is no other way to separate the ore and the contaminant from the gold. And so God brings trials. They're not random. They're purposeful. They're carefully selected to do the very best work so that he can turn you into the gold, set you free from the contaminants that there. And that's why James says, be patient in the middle of these trials. God is doing something beautiful in you. He's growing a crop. He's growing maturity. He's making you gold. Be patient with this. Now, look, I've never seen a goldsmith in action. I assume very few of you have. But I've seen something incredibly similar. I've watched people make gumbo. Every now and then, we'll have some big event, and usually one of the guys will bring their stuff and make gumbo. And they'll bring the propane. They'll bring the burner, and they'll bring their big pot, and they'll bring their special little ladles, their special paddles, and their special equipment, you know. and they'll bring the Cajun Trinity, and they'll bring the flour and the chicken and their favorite sausage and their secret mix of spices, and they'll bring all of that up here. And then they'll fire up the burner, either out here or in the bag. They'll fire up the burner. They'll get the pot on there, and they'll get the flour and oil going, and they'll watch it, and they'll stir it, and they'll watch it, and they'll stir it, and they'll adjust the temperature just so, and they'll keep working on it and working on it and working on it. And if, you know, see, I don't have the patience. I want a jar, I want to pour in a pot, and I want to stick some meat in it. But those of you who do it the right way, you sit there for at least an hour just stirring it till you get the roux the perfect color. And then you add in the veggies and the meats and the spices and the water. And then I'll watch these guys. They'll sit out there for hours right next to the pot, skimming off the fat, tasting it, adding, turning the heat up, turning the pot down until they get it exactly right at exactly the right time. And then we all eat it and go, glorious. Right? That's exactly what God does to you. He brings the heat to just the right level. He stirs it at just the right time. He never walks away. He brings it hot enough so it'll cook, but not so hot that it'll burn. And he just keeps working it and shaping it until it produces something glorious. God brings the heat to refine you like gold. He brings the trial so he can grow up a crop. He brings the struggle so he can shape your character. And it's all done to accomplish a great work. Look at what verse 8 says. We're still in Peter. 1 Peter 1:8. And he says, though you have not seen him and we can't see what he's doing in our lives, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him, you trust him, and you are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy, for you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. When you hear that phrase, so often we hear salvation of your souls, we assume somebody's becoming a Christian. Well, they're being saved. But that's not what he means here, because to save your soul means multiple things in Scriptures. And here what he means is to deliver you from the contaminating ore, to set you free to be who God designed you to be. And it says, what he says is, we can't see God. We can't see how he's working. We don't know what he's doing, but we can trust him to have his hand on the thermostat, to bring just the right heat, just at the right moment, to transform you and design you and to make you what he intended you to be. And again, that's why James says, count it all joy. That's why he says, be patient. God is at work here. Now, as we go through these trials, there are two dangers that we have to be aware of. Two dangers that come our way in the midst of a trial. Now turn back over a page to James 5. Two dangers that he mentions. The first one is this. It's the danger of attacking other people while you're in the middle of a trial. Look down at verse 9. Through this little verse, and you might be wondering why. He says, don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you'll be judged. The judge is standing at the door. And what he's saying is that when you're in the middle of the trial, when God has got the heat turned up and you hurt and you want to run away, the temptation is to attack the people who are around you. You know, when he says brothers and sisters, what he's really saying is that's the temptation to attack those people closest to us. We're looking for somebody to blame for this thing. And we want to attack our family or our friends or our brothers and sisters in Christ. We want to lash out because we're in pain. You know, there was a point in time when my neighbor had a dog. My next door neighbor had a dog, and I came out. I went out to the garage one day, and I could hear the dog on the side of the garage. So I go around, and I don't know what the dog had done. I don't know how, but he'd reached his paw underneath the fence. It was a chain link fence, and when he pulled back, he had impaled his paw on the front on the fence. The chain link's at the bottom, and he was skewered on this thing. And he couldn't get it off, and he's whimpering and howling a little bit. So I went down to reach down and to help him get off the fence. Well, you know what he did. You know exactly what he did. He tried to bite me, at which point I called his owner. I mean, the owner was able to come and deal with him. When you're in pain, you start lashing out at anybody around you, because you're in pain, and you blame them, and you attack them, and you grumble at them. And we begin to attack the very people God has put in our lives to help us. And some of the people that are causing you pain, remember patience deals sometimes with people. Those people in your life are there to refine you. Maybe that's why you have a difficult boss right now. God's trying to grow something up in you. Maybe that's why you have this irritating coworker. It's because God is refining you. Maybe that's why you're battling with your strong-willed child right now. That it's really about you that God is shaping character. You know, maybe that's why you're struggling through a controlling parent. Because God is refining you, and it hurts. It's hot. It's painful. But in the middle of that, there's this temptation to somehow attack out the people who are around us. But these people are not your enemies. You have an enemy. His name is Satan. He's at work, wants to destroy you. But our battle is never against flesh and blood. It's another battle. But God allows the battle to refine you. There's a second danger, and it's the danger that we begin to doubt God. That's why James brings Job into the story. Verse 11, you'll notice he says, as you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered under the situational struggles. And he says, you've heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about in Job's life. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. And Job's story is pretty famous. You probably know the story one way or another. But Job is this guy who loved the Lord. But then, you know, Satan goes to work. And God allows some things to happen. Before you know it, Job has lost all his possessions. He's lost all of his wealth. He's lost all of his kids. They've all died. He's lost, his health. And he's covered with boils and in pain, which is like shingles on steroids. You know, he's lost his status and his standing in the community, so he ends up out and living in the trash dump. He's lost his wife who bails on him because he's a mess. He's lost everything. And in the middle of the thing, he begins to doubt God. He started off with incredible faith in God, but as you read through this long narration of his story, you begin to see him asking God, where are you? What are you doing? Why have you abandoned me? And he starts to doubt God in two areas. First, he begins to doubt that God cares about him. He says, you don't care anymore. You don't love me anymore. You're mad at me. If you loved me, you would do something. Why have you turned your back on me? And he also begins to doubt that God can do anything. He says, are you weak? Have you lost all your strength? You know, am I just caught in some vicious cycle of fate that you can't do anything about? And Job gets caught up in these terrible thoughts about God. And he thinks that God either can't rescue him or won't rescue him. That he either doesn't care or he can't do anything about it. And that's the lie we all begin to believe in the middle of the refining. When the temperature is hot and you're boiling, in that moment you begin to go, God, where did you go? What are you doing? Can't you do anything? Won't you do anything? Don't you care? And you doubt him. And you doubt him. And yet what he's trying to drive home is, no, it's God who is allowing the refining. And he's got his hand on the thermostat. He knows what he's doing. And that's why in verse 11, James has to make up a word. He creates a brand new Greek word that has never existed before this. And at the end, he says, the Lord is full of compassion and mercy. That little phrase, full of compassion, is one word. What it really means is God is really, 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 really compassionate. For the Greeks, they understood compassion, love, to come out of your bowels. And so the word literally is, God is multi-boweled, which is a weird picture, I know. But what it really means is God really, 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 really cares. Don't buy the lie that he doesn't care. And he's merciful. He won't give you more than you can handle. He won't let it go on too long. He's merciful, and he will always be watching it. See, if God were to allow all of the trials of your life to come onto you at one time, you would be crushed. But he doesn't. What God does is he allows one trial and then takes it away and allows another trial and eventually brings a third trial that maybe is heavier than the other two. But he is perfectly and completely aware of what you can handle. So he wisely measures the trials according to your strength so that not even a bruised reed is broken. He brings it to you at just the right moment, in just the right way, for just the right length of time, in order to grow you up, to cook you up, to make you pure, to transform you. And he will bring all of these things so that we will become the person he designed us to be. And he does it full of compassion and overflowing with mercy. It's because he loves you. And I know you're in the middle of trials right now. We all are. All of our lives are not going according to plan. But the master goldsmith has a plan. And he knows exactly what he's doing. He hasn't left you or forsaken you. He's remaking you and exposing the gold within you for all to see. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, thank you. Thank you that you're at work and that you know what you're doing. Thank you for the promise that our struggles have purpose and we're not on some meaningless journey. Thank you that everything you do, Father, comes out of your loving hand, that there is nothing that touches us that is not filtered through your great love. And so, Father, I pray that in all these moments when we want to run away, that you would give us the ability to stand firm and endure so that you can transform and remake us. Thank you for what you're doing. In your name, amen.